Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Welding instructor Alex DeClaire knows VR training platforms like ForgeFX help students master their skills.
There's a big learning curve with welding. Virtual reality simulates that exact muscle memory that they need.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! Just
stay next! Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Alex Kirshner, if it sounds like I'm using the dulcet tones of SCD Smooth Jazz 97.1, can you tell the audience about what time it is on the East Coast for a Saturday night, Sunday morning?
We are recording this hurry up starting at about 12:30 a.m. Eastern Time. That's 11:30 p.m. Central, God's Time, Central Time, on Sunday, after midnight on the East Coast, after the final day of the college football regular season. It's the earliest in the weekend that we've ever recorded the hurry up. And yes, AKA, I'm Alex Kirshner. I am joined by my
house of sleeping people that I'm trying not to wake up.
And my co-host Jeff Goldblum is here with me as well to talk about the weekend in college football. Jeff, Richard Johnson, how are you?
I'm doing well, Alex. I'm doing well.
So the Splits and Duo hurry up this week is a little bit modified from what we usually do. I would say it's selective. We're going to go through fewer games than we usually do. The ones with standings implications, playoff implications, coach carousel implications, some bowl eligibility implications, and the big rivalry games. We will go into basically more detail about fewer things as we kind of take you through this still very fresh weekend in the sport. I think a really fun week 13. Richard, 30 minutes on the clock?
For the last time, my friend. For the last time. In 3, 2, 1. The game.
Richard, this was, I think, a game that generally lived up to it, right? Like, this was as exciting as we want Ohio State-Michigan games to be. I want you to talk about the Michigan of it all, the Sharon Moore of it all. Maybe I'll contemplate the Ryan Day of it all.
Yeah, you know, we talked a lot about how, like, Jim Harbaugh's like in-game savant, and I don't think that he's not. But at the end of the day, Sharon Moore out-chess matched James Franklin 2 weeks ago, and then he out-chess matched Ryan Day today. I mean, it was really quite outstanding from Michigan. They went for it on fourth downs when they needed to. They mashed the gas. They had a trick play with the Donovan Edwards trick, you know, running back pass down there on one end. The way he has... There's a lot of things that go into being a high-level college head football coach. Building a program infrastructure and a program structure and stocking it with players and talent and staff and all that sort of stuff, that is one thing. The other thing, Alex, is managing the game. Sharon Moore can Sharon Moore can manage a game, my friend. That, there is no doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah, and it was especially stark today because Ryan Day played the game differently than Sharon Moore did, and it didn't really work. There were a couple of moments in this game where he made fourth down calls that did not materialize as well as either they could have or as well as he surely hoped at the moment that he executed them. There was a punt on a fourth and one just shy of midfield in the first half that wound up not being a great punt, didn't even get to the 20-yard line for Michigan. And then going into halftime, there was a significant sequence that everyone's going to talk about where Ohio State has a fourth and short. They are inside midfield. They are on the edge of field goal range for about a 52-yard field goal for a young kicker whose career high was a couple yards short of that. And instead of going to try to gain 1 yard and keep the drive going, Ryan Day drains clock, kicks a field goal wide left, I believe it was. And Ohio State not only doesn't get 6 points or 7 points on the board, but doesn't get 3. I didn't take as much issue with that as a lot of people
did. I thought that was fine. That one was fine. They had one in the beginning of the game. They had a fourth down in the beginning of the game that I thought they should have gone for and they punted.
Yeah, that's the one we're talking about. Yeah, I think we're thinking of the same. In the case of the field goal, I was okay with it because the clock was the 12th defender for Michigan. I think it was unlikely that Ohio State was going to get down there and score six. So you're really weighing the long field goal against the possibility of a shorter field goal, but with the turnover on downs possibility baked in. It's a lot of things to run through in your head. You're not going to have an analytical model for everything. It was an okay game management call, I thought, but it didn't work. It was conservative and it didn't work. And when you put that in diametric opposition to Sherrone Moore calling this game really aggressively, not just in terms of things like the Donovan Edwards trick play, but with the really consequential fourth down decisions, they were 3-for-3 on such plays. You get a picture of one coach who coached to win the game and won, and another coach who, I'm not going to say coached not to lose because that saying means nothing, but who allowed the game to come to Ohio State and it never did, is probably the way that I would put it. And when it makes three in a row that you lose, I understand why Ohio State fans are going to be mad. And I think that in this respect, this was a different way of losing to Michigan than the last couple of years. I mean, they got, you know, 2 years in a row, they get kind of physically bullied. They did get pushed around a bit at parts of this game, especially at the end, as Michigan almost killed the entire clock marching down the field. But here, I think they got outmanaged a little bit. They just got outmanaged. And in a marginal game between two elite teams, you get a game like this.
I was waiting for Michigan to drop the hammer, right? Like there were a couple points when I thought, okay, Michigan's going to drop the hammer. Michigan's going to pull away from this. And you know, they're going to, you know, it looked like they were going to take a 14-point lead at one point in the time, you know, down there. And you talk about not being pushed around.
I mean, Ohio State. Instead. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ohio State has that drive where they stuff it down Michigan's throat. I mean, they ran the ball down the length of the field.
Chip Traynham drive, as it will be, as it will be forever known. Yeah.
this is not a classic, you know, they got battered by Michigan or whatever. They just didn't have enough. And it's frustrating because again, they don't have enough. Again, they don't have enough with one of the best players in college football. Who, by the way, that interception in the beginning, that's on him.
Yeah, that wasn't on Kyle McCord. No, I agree.
Run the route. And Kyle McCord didn't do a lot of stuff well in this game. He did some stuff well. He didn't do a lot of stuff well. He was not the best quarterback in this game, even though I don't think J.J. McCarthy is a first-round draft pick because of what he did in this game. McCarthy had two throws that did make you get up out of your seat. I'll give him that. But, you know, I think McCarthy had a lot more variance. Again, McCarthy was not the best quarterback in the game. But that first interception is not on him. And then the one at the end, it's the end. You're making a play. You're getting stuck. It is what it is.
On Ryan Day, as I previewed for you in the midweek show, Ohio State fans, many of them are gonna want Ryan Day fired. He has lost 7 games in 5 years, but those 7 games include most of the games that their fans care about.
Aren't they like
he signed up for this job? He knows exactly what the job is. He got outcoached today by an acting head coach for a team whose main guy was suspended. I get it. I cannot begrudge you this, Ohio State fans. I cannot.
Michigan ends this regular season with Jim Harbaugh having sat out 6 games. It's incredible.
In complete seriousness, Sherrone Moore should not win Big Ten Coach of the Year because the guy at Northwestern, David Braun, should win Big Ten Coach of the Year for somehow dragging that team to 7 wins. But it would be entirely reasonable outside of David Braun's candidacy for Sherrone Moore to be the Big Ten Coach of the Year. Because it sure as hell ain't James Franklin. Sure as hell ain't Ryan Day. I don't think it should be Kirk Ferentz, given his own fault with Brian being the offensive coordinator. Hell of a job by Sherrone Moore. Speaking of Iowa, 13-10 over Nebraska on Black Friday. Just astonishing how much these teams stayed true to themselves. Like, incredible how committed for really 2 whole years Iowa has been to being Iowa. Nebraska picks off Deacon Hill. That's a very Iowa thing. In a tie game in the last minute. And still loses in regulation.
This was incredible.
A minus 17 turnover margin for the season, and I think if you watched a lot of Nebraska games, you would have thought it was actually worse than minus 17.
I watched basically all this game. I was enthralled with the spectacle in this game. There were chunk plays in this game. I mean, this over looked properly cooked at what point in time. It really did.
And yet, every time one of these totals comes up, Iowa seems to go under.
It closed at what, 24.5, 25 this time?
And it did not hit. 23 points, not enough to get to the total in this game. Elsewhere in the Big Ten, Purdue 35, Indiana 31. Indiana outscored by 14 in the fourth quarter to lose the Old Oak and Bucket. They also lost in crushing fashion in a rivalry game to Michigan State the week before. Richard, I will tell you this, that about a month ago, when I checked in with some plugged in Indiana people who have a sense of the way that things are going at Indiana, the thought was that it was very unlikely that Indiana fans would actually be freed from what's been going on in that program with Tom Allen for the last few years. Educated opinion is that things have shifted. Man might be getting a sizable payout to his bank account in the very near future. Seems completely possible to me. Educated opinion, don't know, but feel.
You're in the feel category. All right, yeah. It's a big payday, but hey, you find the money in the couch cushions. You never know what can happen when you look inside those couch cushions.
Maryland also beats Rutgers, by the way, and that doesn't matter. I understand it's Maryland-Rutgers. Why is Alex the self-hating Maryland alum talking about Maryland here? It's actually because Talia Tagovailoa, in his last Big Ten regular season game, becomes the all-time leading passer in this conference. And they're
okay. I have to stop you here because this, like, because we're in the modern era, like the postmodern era of like college football offenses, like shit like this happens all the time when you're like, wait, Talia Tagovailoa is the record. Like, it's the combination of a guy being in school for 9 years and also the Big Ten, like setting the sport back forever until like roughly 2014.
Here's the thing,
but he's the record holder. So
if I'd asked you, who do you think Talia passed to set this record?
Who would you think it was? I don't know.
Okay, so like I would have guessed.
I would have guessed a Justin Fields, maybe.
Interesting.
Maybe
I was going to say JT Barrett. JT Barrett is who I would think. No, it's Curtis Painter from Purdue, who's been out of college for a very long time. So it's a great, great trivia question on all fronts. That was the Big Ten this week. Michigan's going to play Iowa in Indianapolis, and that will certainly be a football game next week. Richard, to the Southeastern Conference.
Fourth and goal from the 31-yard line. Here's the snap. Milroe stands in, lets everybody get downfield. Still standing. He throws into the end zone.
He caught it.
It's caught! It's caught by Isaiah Bond! Caught by Isaiah Bond in the corner of the end zone. Touchdown, Alabama!
That's Eli Gold of the Crimson Tide Sports Network from Learfield. Could have heard that and could hear all kinds of live radio broadcasts for your favorite team and bunches of other teams on the Varsity app. Great work by the team this season on the College Football Blitz, which of course wraps when the regular season does, but still much more to see on the Varsity app. Thanks to our friends over there for generously providing these audio clips to spice up the hurry up this year, and always a pleasure when we get Eli Gold on the show. Iron Bowl 27-24 for Alabama. Alex, what is there to be said about the end of this? What is there to be said?
The quarterback spy, Richard, the goddamn quarterback spy that Auburn puts on the decisive play in this game is one of the most inexplicable things that you will ever see in a lifetime of watching football and watching dramatic endings to games. Hugh Freeze and defensive coordinator Ron Roberts paint kind of a masterpiece here. You know the situation. Auburn has Alabama at the 31-yard line of Auburn after a couple of really disastrous plays, a bad snap that goes behind Jalen Milroe, an illegal forward pass after he crosses the line of scrimmage and goes backwards. This is not quite a Hail Mary, but it is close. It's a very low percentage shot into the end zone for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Auburn sees Alabama come out five wide. They call timeout. Roberts, Freeze, the troops, they all get together. They're going to talk about what they're going to do on the last play of the game. They come out, and the problem isn't that Auburn rushes two blitzers here, two pass rushers on the play. Like, we can quibble about whether you should rush three, whether you should rush four. Like, reasonable people can disagree about how many pass rushers are appropriate for a heave into the end zone in the last play of the game. What is totally inexplicable is that Auburn has a third guy up near the line of scrimmage who isn't rushing the passer, but he's just serving as a quarterback spy, lurking a little bit off the line of scrimmage. Richard, it's fourth down and goal from the 31-yard line. Jalen Milroe could be the offspring of Michael Vick and Walter Payton and Usain Bolt in one body, and he is not going to scramble for a 31-yard touchdown. It's just not going to happen. There are eight other guys behind this quarterback spy who, if Jalen Milroe, for God knows what reason, decides he wants to try to scramble for a touchdown, will run to him and tackle him. He is not going to scramble. It makes no sense. He could run 20 yards. Auburn wins the game. He could run 25 yards. Auburn wins the game. He could run 30 yards, 30 and a half yards, and Auburn still wins the game. But yet Auburn has a quarterback spy standing near the line of scrimmage, not blitzing, just watching to make sure that Jalen Milroe doesn't run. To where? To where is he going to run that could affect the outcome of this game? They need a touchdown. They're down more than a field. There's nothing that this player is doing. And Auburn, of course, they still have eight guys back there. But Milroe throws one up to Isaiah Bond, who somehow has nobody near him except for one cornerback who he beats. A little bit of a push off, but that's life. It would have been really good if you had another person standing back there in the end zone.
Here's where I will stop you. Everybody else was double covered in the end zone. It's funny if you look at the film, because Bama gets five down there. So Bama gets five down there. Auburn is actually doubling two, if not three, of the receivers down there. They are doubling a lot of the guys down there. Jalen Milroe had the time to find one of the two receivers in the end zone who was not doubled up. In my opinion, if you're going to do the spy thing, it's not the worst thing in the world if the guy rushes, because what you do is you send that guy, and you could send him on a little bit of a delay, but you send him on a delay and you try to force the ball out. Like, you literally try to speed Jalen Milroe out and say, you're getting rid of the ball. Like, you're not standing there and picking us apart like that, and choosing your weapon there. It was inexplicable to me, just like it is to you, that spy would stand there and not do anything. Like, go.
He's not going to run. He has nowhere to run. He is not going to scramble through the eight guys behind you into the end zone. It's just you might as well have played this play with 10 defenders if this is what you were going to do. It doesn't mean it is the reason why Isaiah Bond was able to make that catch. Milroe also threw a dime. But
and he threw a dime, Alex, because like this wasn't a Hail Mary in my opinion. Like, a Hail Mary is like a 60 yarder, a 70 yarder. You know what I mean? Like, something you really 30. I'm not saying 30 yards is not impressive, but like, you can throw that with a legitimate amount of high level accuracy, which he did.
And which makes it even more galling that they didn't use the third guy up there to try to make him throw faster. Like, he'd still be back there right now surveying the defense if he wanted to be. It was just, and they called a timeout to do this. Auburn called a timeout to dial that up. It wasn't the only thing. The thing that set this up was a muffed punt where the backup returner was in the game for Auburn. Someone asked Hugh Freeze about this after the game. And Hugh Freeze at first didn't know who had been back there and wasn't sure. Corrected himself and wasn't sure why the backup had been back there. I understand that special teams coaches have some autonomy, but not good. Not what you want when the guy muffs the punt, when you're the head man and you have no idea why he was back there. Great game. Also, I guess Alabama is still alive in the college football playoff race. I guess that's the other part of this. But this was just such a, like, my brain broke with how Auburn managed the end of this game defensively. And I'll be thinking about it for days. Weeks.
See you next Saturday in Atlanta, fellas. Ole Miss 17, Mississippi State 7. This was not setting a lot of records for the best Egg Bowl we've ever seen. But Ole Miss gets it done in a rock fighty game. It was cool that Greg Knox came out on an ATV, though. That was cool.
Yeah, very cool. Missouri 48, Arkansas 14. Arkansas is a mess. Really, really bad. Sam Pittman is going to be back next year. Is going to be. According to Hunter Yurchek, the Arkansas athletic director. But the story here is Mizzou. This was a Cody Schrader game. They are a New Year's six-bound team. They're just really good this year. And I don't know what else to say about them other than it's just been very impressive all the way around. Like, this is a great year for Missouri, and it could very well, probably will, just turn out to be like the one up year. Like it might've been for Tennessee last year. You don't know, but it's more than proof of concept for what Eli Drinkwitz is trying to do there. And it's a tremendous way to close out the year. You're going to have a chance to win the 11th game in a very serious bowl game. Clemson beat South Carolina as well. Keep South Carolina out of a bowl game. Gets Clemson to a number that is less, you know, eight. There's a difference in respectability between 8-4 and 7-5. Clemson shouldn't be going either, but 8-4 sounds like less of a meltdown year, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's, I think Clemson scored like early and we're just able to sit on it. We talked about this in the midweek. Like, this was a game where it's like, yeah, you know, Clemson's down, blah, 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 blah. And like, one team runs that state. It's one of those kinds of things.
Still what it is. Richard, one company runs apparel on the college sports internet, and that is Homefield Apparel. Oftentimes, we tell you about our own promo code, SCD20, for 20% off your first order when you go to homefieldapparel.com. And look, if you have never ordered from Homefield, you should still use the promo code SCD20 and get 20% off your first order and support the show this week at homefieldapparel.com. But if you have already ordered a bunch of things from Homefield, which I know a bunch of you have, I'm wearing a Homefield shirt right now for the lovely YouTube audience that's watching us. Then guess what? You too can get 20% off anything that you might order at homefieldapparel.com through Monday. Homefield's Black Friday sale is not to be missed. Just use the promo code Black Friday, all caps, one word, Black Friday, and get 20% off your order at Homefield through Monday. It is a tremendous opportunity. Richard, in the Big 12 Conference, the Texas Longhorns, 57. The Texas Tech Red Raiders, 7. Arch Manning got into this game. Texas was obviously fantastic at home. They had some fun with Brett Yormark after the game, as you knew they would do if they won. I do just want to step back here and acknowledge how impressive it is that Texas did manage this whole Arch Manning, Quinn Ewers thing in what appears to be a no drama, very successful way where everyone seems fine. And there weren't snipey leaks circulating about the Austin press corps or anything, and everyone just got along. It's actually, I didn't think it was going to be like that. I know Godfrey didn't. I mean, it's tremendous for
interesting
Texas.
What happens when you win.
Yeah. Yeah. Winning can be useful. Texas is going to play Oklahoma State in the Big 12 championship game. Oklahoma State 40, BYU 34 in two overtimes. Oklahoma State has 9 lives. They are just unkillable this year.
They were down heavy in this game.
They were down heavy in this game. They have Ollie Gordon, who scored 5 touchdowns. That was all of Oklahoma State's touchdowns in this game. But the play of the game and one of the defensive plays of the season comes in overtime in this game. Isaac Rex for BYU catches a pass from Jake Retzlaff, BYJU, as he is known, the quarterback of the Cougars. And Trey Rucker for Oklahoma State, in basically one motion, just hauls down Rex, rips the ball out clean, and grabs it off the ground for a strip fumble to end the game on a play that didn't look like it lended itself even to the possibility of a turnover. So it's a tremendous play by Trey Rucker. It punches Oklahoma State's ticket to get another crack at Texas in Arlington next weekend. It's going to be a fun game. And Texas is going to be in probably win and in position as you look at the shape of the playoff four. We'll see where the committee slots everybody this week, but I think Texas is going to be in very good position to probably control their own destiny when they go in and play that game. Oklahoma 69, TCU 45. Oklahoma kind of had an old Oklahoma game here, just like what it used to be, the way the Sooners used to play football on both sides of the ball.
Brent Venables tripped coming out of the tunnel. And it's like one of the funniest videos, because he's all right. It's one of the funniest videos you'll ever see, because they're like, it's in the fall. Like they put the steam out, so you can't see anybody until they all like stumble out over him. Look it up. It's quite hilarious. West Virginia 34, Baylor 31. West Virginia got it done, man. You picked that team to go last in the league. You thought Neil Brown was a dead man walking, and look at them now.
Yeah. Neil Brown went and put it on the table at Big 12 media days before the year. Clearly took it very personally that the Mountaineers had been picked to be the worst team in the Big 12, and just said outrightly, we are not going to be the last place team in this league. He didn't say verbatim, but he was basically saying, we are not that bad. Like, you will see. 8-4, a very solid year, and got to think that that provides absolutely no reason for them to consider making a change at that position going into the next year. However, there is a West Virginia coach, or a recent one, who I gotta think is having those conversations prompted about him right now. That's Dana Holgorsen, who loses 27-13 to UCF.
There's a come to Jesus meeting on Sunday morning with Dana and Houston Brass. I don't know which way that's going to go. I know Houston mega booster Tillman Fertitta has already said he looks forward to another year of Dana, but I imagine it's going to be a come to Jesus meeting tomorrow. Well, later today.
In the American Athletic, Tulane 29, UTSA 16. If you are inclined to do the, this coach was distracted,
I don't think you should do, because I understand that Jeff Traylor was not distracted for this game.
Very fair. The way the A&M coaching search has reportedly developed has not centered on Jeff Traylor. But if you, let's say you love that narrative. Let's just say that you're always looking for coaches who you can hang it around, that they were distracted, that they had their focus in other places. I think the most compelling coach of the week to do that with would be Jeff Traylor, because UTSA did not look like UTSA in this game. They turned it over four times. One of those was a pick thrown on a fake punt. Tulane had a fake punt in this game, and UTSA committed DPI on that fake punt to keep a Tulane drive going. They were a complete operational mess. They won yardage, time of possession, etc., but just could not stop shooting themselves in the foot. And they lose this game to Tulane, which goes unbeaten through the American Athletic Conference slate and is going to have a chance, probably, we'll see again where the committee slots some teams this week, but probably to be winning back to the New Year Six for the second year in a row. Hard to say enough about what Willie Fritz has done at Tulane.
It's, dude, they have a chance to go to back-to-back conference championship games?
They are going Tulane? To. They are going
sorry,
to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back-to-back New Year's bowl games at Tulane.
It's,
is this the 1940s? Crazy. Dead letters available at splitsundo.com.
He's stature territory. I mean, he really is.
They're going to play against SMU, which beats Navy 59-14. SMU just kind of waltzes to the title game here without seeing Tulane or UTSA in the course of the regular season. But they were better than everybody else, and they beat Memphis, so they deserve their spot. Preston Stone, the quarterback, very good again. We're going to see more of this, by the way, as these conferences balloon in size starting next year with leagues joining the American in this regard. You're going to have teams that go to conference championship games where you might have multiple undefeated teams that just didn't see each other going to conference championships. You're seeing it right now in the American, and it could get pretty weird and unruly as you get into having 16 and 18 team leagues be the normal order of the day, but you still get to hopefully settle things on the field in a fair and equitable manner. And the way it works out in the American is that that is going to be the case between SMU and Tulane. In the ACC, Richard, Florida State with a backup quarterback, Tate Rodemaker, 24. Florida in a packed stadium with a chance for a great moment, 15.
Yeah, that was a tough way to end that one. Look, I think Florida came out with a game plan to work around their backup quarterback. And in a way, they had a game plan to work around their backup quarterback and attack Florida State's backup quarterback. Like, it looked like Florida State was developing its Tate Rodemaker game plan, like on the fly, like building the plane as they were like flying it. Whereas Florida kind of came into the game with a plan and then just kind of ran out of steam. Eventually, like, Florida was going to not stop scoring. Like, you just knew that was going to happen. And it did. Florida got a safety. Florida took advantage of their breaks in the beginning of the game, and you knew eventually like the points were going to run out, and they did. And Florida State was able to do enough to build back into that game. And at the end, boy, you have a classic Florida, roughing penalty in a dumb spot, which is like the shoe throw penalty a few years ago, where you're just like, come on.
Undisciplined, operationally unsound. Stories of Florida season from the very beginning to the very end. And I take your points and your reporting extremely seriously. It's clear that Florida is invested here, but I don't get it. I'm not encouraged in any respect, and I don't think anybody is. Kentucky 38, Louisville 31. Richard, you and Godfrey made this point to me effectively on the midweek show, Kentucky did an old-fashioned Kentuckying in this game.
Yeah, man. Mark Stoops is your coach. If you have a chance to fucking ruin Louisville's season, guess what, man? It's going to happen. And it does seem
this happened like in Mark the Lamar Stoops Jackson is- year, too. They do it when Louisville has a chance to really do something special. That's when Kentucky is going to get them.
It also does seem like Mark Stoops is going to continue to be Kentucky's head coach, despite the fact that it didn't look like that 3 hours ago. So,
yeah, a fascinating sport. Night. And we'll make this note that the podcasting is a somewhat static medium. There is going to be news that comes out over the course of Sunday that will involve people we talk about on this program. And we're just going to have to see where those chips fall. I will say that A&M fans seemed infuriated about the idea of Mark Stoops going to be the coach of that school. And like, I kind of get it. Like, no one wakes up on Christmas morning and is like, oh, I desperately hope Mark Stoops is under my tree. But man's a pretty good football coach. I think Kentucky fans are pretty pleased that he's probably not exiting. Just a hunch. Richard, NC State was putting it on North Carolina this evening.
Yeah, dude, it's the most like predictable shit ever, man. Like, it's like
39-20.
We talked about this in the midweek too. It's like both of these teams, UNC and USC, like transcendent quarterback prospects, nothing. You got nothing of consequence out of them. You got a division championship. Cool. Like, that stinks. It stinks.
Yeah, and not even for it's disappointing, especially for a school like UNC, which is not going to have quarterbacks like Drake May come around on the basis that they might feel. You know, they had a number two overall pick a few years ago with Mitch Trubisky, who granted wasn't in college anything like Drake May is right now. But to get a player like Drake May and to get this little out of the deal, thank you, Gene Chizik. Thank you, Mac Brown. Very well done. Is extremely disappointing. Commonwealth Cup, Virginia Tech, so many points. UVA at home, so few points. The Tech offense goes to new heights in this game. Kyron Drones, very big day. Daquan Felton, very big day, catching long passes. Bashiel Tutin, big day, toting the mail. I think this is a proof of concept capper that gets Virginia Tech bowl eligible and really, really gives you something to feel that Brent Pry could make this thing better. Like, I mean, he's already made it better. He's made it better than it was when Justin Fuente was exiting, but that he could possibly, despite the structural disadvantages now for Virginia Tech, get them back to something close to what they want to be. Is that fair?
So, yeah, I think that's fair. Civil War, Oregon wins 31-7. You kept on thinking, is Oregon State gonna put up a fight here? And they just never were able to do it. I mean, Bo Nix has like an 80% completion percentage, and he's not just throwing screens, man.
No, I think that people are starting to reconcile to deal with the fact that Bo is just really good now. Like, he's just become a really good college quarterback, and they don't have training wheels on. And I think Jaden Daniels should win the Heisman Trophy because Godfrey's not here. We can talk about the Heisman without him getting mad at us. I think that Jaden Daniels should win. I think he's had the best season of anyone at the eligible Heisman positions in college football. But like, if Oregon beats Washington next week, Bo's going to have a pretty good case, and I'm not going to be offended that Bo Nix wins the Heisman.
Yeah. Washington 24, Wazoo 21. This was in heavy doubt until Washington had like play call of the year.
Yeah, Ryan Grass, take a bow. And Michael Penn and Rome Odunze, take a bow. Everybody.
They run this like little reverse pitch deal to Odunze, and they keep, you know, a drive going, and they end up able to go ahead drive, and they won the game. But Washington State, who I had left for dead on this show for multiple weeks, they were in it. They were in it till the end.
Yeah, it was a good Apple Cup. I'm heartened that it is not the last Apple Cup, not the last Civil War, that these series are going to continue, that realignment does not take everything out of these rivalries, and it's going to be good to get to see more of those games. Arizona 59, Arizona State 23. I think everyone knew exactly how this game was going to go, and it went exactly that way. Noah Fifita has been a revelation for Arizona. Arizona's probably going to miss out on the New Year's Six by a little bit, just the way that it looks like the committee rankings are going to fall. But a really good 9-win season, a chance to get to 10 in a bowl game. and to feel pretty optimistic about what Jed Fish is doing there. It's kind of incredible to me how much this rivalry has flipped since 3 years ago, when, remember, the score was almost the exact inverse, and it was Kevin Sumlin getting fired from Arizona the next day. You can rise and you can fall very, very dramatically in this sport if your program's kind of in the stations of the Arizona schools. And that's what's happened in the last 3 years.
Speaking of rising and falling, Utah 23, Colorado 17. Colorado, no Shador Sanders, and Colorado being what Colorado is currently against this Utah team, yes, put up much more of a fight than you may think, but lost and are 4-8. They end up 4-8, sure.
Colorado is going to be a fascinating offseason tale because it just didn't work on the lines. And like I don't even know that soft is the word. I don't know if I don't know that it's a matter of like not being physical enough, but it's just not being good enough. Like, they're not big enough. They're not strong enough. They don't have the guys to control the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball. And if you're Deion, is it possible to portal enough of that help? Is it possible to find freshman prep recruits that can help you on that side of in those areas of the game? I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to find out, because I think they only have one prep recruit in their current recruiting class. So you better find some, because it's a tough position to portal.
And Richard, this is the first time that this has happened in Splitsundo history, but we are recording before one game on the Hurry Up is actually over yet. Cal, in a rivalry game of UC System schools, has things in hand on UCLA in a significant rivalry game and looks to be on the verge of getting to a bowl game in a nice, kind of surprising, but not to us. If you listen to the Pac-12 preview, jump forward for Cal Bears football in the last year before they go to the ACC. So well done to Justin Wilcox, to Cal for putting something together in this final season of the Pac-12. Richard, in the Mountain West, are you aware of the cosmic shit show that is unfolding in the standings in this conference on this last weekend of the year?
Yeah, dude, let's just do this all together. San Jose State 31, UNLV 31.
37-31, San Jose State, sorry. Yeah.
Boise State 27, Air Force 19. All right, we turn our attentions to the computers. A nation must turn its attention to the computers to figure out who's going to play for the Mountain West Championship game.
Yeah, they use a computer rating, like an algorithmically figured out computer rating, to determine this tiebreaker between these three schools. That computer doesn't update until Sunday morning. It's not even exactly clear when. So we have no clue what the conference championship game is going to be in the Mountain West. I have no idea. I didn't even realize that this was still a possible outcome.
This was going to happen in the American too. If I think UTSA won, this was going to happen in America.
Richard, I feel like I follow college football pretty closely. You know, like I feel like I spend a lot of time on like kind of minutiae of this sport. I had no idea we still did this.
Yeah, it's in the ACC's tiebreaking protocol as well. It's like the sixth or seventh tiebreaker. They use Sports Source Analytics. I don't know who the Mountain West uses. I haven't looked that up yet.
I'm gobsmacked. It's like finding out that there are still places where you like get like those old laws where like if you jaywalk on a Tuesday night in a certain town in New Jersey, you get 35 years in the state pen. It's like one of those. Like, I just had no idea that we still did this in college football. But if I may, I hope that the computer spit out UNLV and San Jose State for a rematch. I don't think that we need to see Boise in the Mountain West Championship game this year. You know, like, they'll be back. Let's get a UNLV. Let's get a San Jose State, which did win during the COVID year. Like, let's get some relatively fresh blood while Boise kind of reloads for the future. So that's what I'm hoping the machines decide to give us in the Mountain West Championship. Richard, in the Sun Belt, James Madison, very, very pissed off, clearly, after losing to App State last week, destroys Coastal Carolina. This is another very many, very few game in our notes. Coastal is not good. And here they miss a chance to get into the Sun Belt Championship on a technicality for the second year in a row. And their loss turns out to be App State's game, because App beats Georgia Southern in a significant rivalry game, 55-27.
JMU is going to go to a bowl game, by the way, because there's not enough 6-6
teams. Yes. Jacksonville State as well.
Troy, 35. Southern miss 17.
Yeah, Troy is good, as we've talked about. I think that they're going to beat App and win this conference, but we're going to find out. The kind of rebound in the last 3-4 weeks for App State from a position where it really did look like they were going to have to fire Sean Clark has been serious. Like, it's been a robust, quick turnaround for App State. Is there an asterisk on it if they can win this conference championship being in instead of James Madison? Yes, in a way. I mean, JMU is the more deserving team, but I guess maybe it's only a half asterisk because App did win in Harrisonburg, and at least they beat the team that is kind of unjustly being pushed out of that game. So it makes it feel a little bit less cheap. That's not App's problem. Obviously, they got a chance to go in and win a game. And it's going to be, I think, one of the more entertaining games of conference championship weekend in terms of the possibility of the game actually being close. Richard, Old Dominion 25, Georgia State 24. This one has nothing to do with the conference championship race, but just wanted to point out that Georgia State blew a 21-point halftime lead to Old Dominion here and allowed a 6-1 start to the season to go to a 6-6 finish. I would like to apologize to the listeners, to Panther Nation, to all interested parties for retracting my view that the Georgia State staff under Sean Elliott was busted, because they still look pretty busted. And that's what I get for making judgments based on 7 games when it's a 12-game season.
Toledo 32, Central Michigan 17. Again, I said this on a show last week. Y'all are being weird about Jason Candle. Not you, Alex. Not you, the listening audience. Y'all.
What do you mean,
weird
people?
About Jason Candle? You know what I mean. Miami 17, Ball State 15. Miami, Toledo, MAC championship game next weekend in Detroit?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, it could be a game. Miami has been kind of limping here a bit. Brett Gabbert is obviously out for the year, and I think that Toledo should beat them and that the Rockets should be back-to-back MAC champions. But let's see. Weird things can happen in this conference, as we've talked about. It's very upwardly and downwardly mobile very, very quickly. Conference USA, Liberty gets to 12-0, winning by 14 at UTEP. UTEP has been under discussion on the eyes list that you and Godfrey did on splitsundo.com in the last couple of days. And I would imagine is certainly going to be a situation to look at going forward with Dana Dimmel. New Mexico State is 10-3, so it's 2 double-digit win teams going into the Conference USA championship game. NMSU has played 13 games because one of those was Hawaii. And when you play Hawaii, you get the Hawaii exception, as it is sometimes called. You can play an extra regular season game. Richard, the list of newly bowl eligible teams as of recording time, JMU and Jacksonville State, by virtue of the lack of 6-6s to fill out the bowls, looks like Cal is going to join them as well. And then UCF, Rice, Syracuse, Old Dominion, Virginia Tech, Marshall, USF gets in by beating Charlotte, Eastern Michigan, Utah State, all bowl eligible by getting their 6th win in the 13th week of the season. I think of those, like the one that strikes me the most is USF getting to 6 wins in Alex Golish's first year. The offensive coordinator came over from Tennessee. You kind of combine that with Tennessee's inability to continue much of what it was trying to continue on offense last year. Don't get me wrong, losing Hendon Hooker, losing Jalen Hyatt probably played a little bit to do with that as well. But I think Alex Golish's stock right now is pretty high. Like, you look at that guy and think, huh, he looks like he was kind of important to what Tennessee did. And he looks like he's pretty important to what USF is doing right now in coming back from a really miserable few years under Jeff Scott.
I actually saw the result of the last game we're going to talk about flash across the timeline and legitimately was like, wait, what? Mountain Union lost in not the championship game of the D3 playoffs.
Yeah, almost crazy. Never gets knocked out early in the Division III playoffs. They have been in the playoffs for 34 years in a row. Obviously, that's a college football record. And they lose as the number 2 ranked team in the country to Alma College, the Alma College Scots from Michigan. Congrats to the Scots. You know, great Scots, if you will. Mount Union losing this early is odd. Like, it's odd even to anyone with like a glancing familiarity with lower level college football, because they just don't do this. So cheers to the Scots.
That's the biggest win for a team from Michigan over a team from Ohio all weekend.